Etios, Perik Aleph, Mishnah Yud Beis 112. And now we turn to the fourth and final subsection, if you will, of the first chapter of Etios, meaning the first three Mishnayos talked about situations which Shammai and Hillel argued, and the Chacham ruled against both of them. Then they had three more Mishnayos about what I call the Meta Mishnayos, about why Das Yachid is there, the role of dissenting or minority opinions. And then we had, from 7 to 11, we discuss scenarios essentially where Shammai argued with Beis Shammai. Now the last three Mishnayos here, Yud Beis, Yud Gimel, Yud Dalet, 12, 13, 14, are dealing with scenarios in which Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are disagreeing, and Beis Hillel changes their opinion to rule like Beis Shammai. Okay? In total, we'll have four separate cases like that in the three Mishnayos. The first Mishnah, our Mishnah here, actually has two separate cases. And the topic of this Mishnah here in Yud Beis has to do with a woman being widowed and the consequences of that. So this Mishnah actually appears also in the 15th parak of Yevamos. And over there in the last couple of parakim of Yevamos, you talk about the idea of an Eid Echad Nema Beisurin, that a single witness is believed regarding certain restrictions, notably for our topic here, that a man died, and therefore his wife is free to marry somebody else. So let me take a step back and explain that. Normally when it comes to establishing marriages and divorces, you need to have two kosher witnesses. That's a rule. It's not even a matter of to witness to confirm it happened. It's a requirement in and of itself, because ein davar shebe'erva pachos mishnayim, you need to have two witnesses to effect something. Now, so therefore you need to have two witnesses to effect a marriage. Now, a man dying leaves his wife as a widow, whether or not there are witnesses to see it. Once he's dead, the marriage is dissolved, of course. But to establish it as halachic fact that he's dead, since last time we saw them they were married, we need to have two witnesses normally. But the rabbis made it to Kana to listen. We're going to believe even a single witness to testify that a man died, allowing his widow to remarry, because the alternative is they'll have lots of women who are stuck as agunos, women who can never remarry because they're stuck, sort of anchored to their husband who's no longer around. So then they're sort of trapped. Since he's not around, they can never get remarried and they'll be trapped. So therefore, the rabbi said, to make a leniency, we'll rely on the testimony of a single person to testify that a woman's husband died so that she can remarry. Now, that one person who testifies doesn't need to be a third party. It could be the woman herself. And that's essentially the crux of our mission here. We're going to believe a woman to testify that her own husband died. So, what is the scope of that leniency? That's the topic of our mission here. The first part says as follows. Eilu devarim shechazru beis Hillel lahoros kedivrei beis Shammai. The following, meaning the following four cases in the next three Mishnayos, are the cases in which beis Hillel changed their position and ruled in accordance with beis Shammai. And this really is sort of like, there's a Musar point here, which is beis Hillel, of course, were Gaone Olam, right? They were the geniuses beyond. And they could have made up lots of arguments to defend their positions. You'll see their positions definitely are defensible. And yet they were Omed Ala Emes, they were Mekayim Vehevi Moda Ala Emes, the principle of Chazal, you should admit the truth. And they really changed their position because they saw it was the proper, right position. So the first is as follows. It says, Ha'isha Sheba'a Memedina Sayam, a woman who comes from overseas, va'amra meis ba'ali, and she reports to the local bezin, her husband died. This is not a situation in which we didn't have the facts in the local bezin. The bezin knew she was a married woman, and she reports that while they're on vacation in Tahiti, the husband, you know, he drowned. So then says the Mishnah, tinasei, we believe her testimony, even though she's only one witness, even though, of course, she's potentially no gospel davar, she potentially has like a vested interest, but still we believe her to remarry. The Mishnah in Yevamos actually says this is has two caveats. It assumes that we're in a situation in which there's shalom, there's peace beno levena, that the two of them are not known to be sort of having a bad relationship, in which case we would suspect her of essentially trying to get rid of her husband and remarry elsewhere, even though he's still alive. So we trust her because there's no known, you know, bad blood in the marriage. And also, v'shalom ba'olam, the world scene is one in which there's no reason to think that the woman could have jumped to a conclusion her husband died when really he's still alive. Meaning if it was a war zone, or for that matter, it was just some sort of, you know, natural disaster, and there was a volcano in Tahiti, and the husband went for a walk and didn't come back, so the woman didn't know he died, but she'll assume, listen, there's a war or there's a volcano and now he's dead and I'll never see him again. If I don't say he's dead, then then I'll never be able to hear my mind. I'll be trapped. So therefore, I better go and report. So in those scenarios, we do not believe her. But otherwise, we do, says the Mishnah. Similarly, the other side of the coin, if it was a situation in which her husband had no living descendants, then she falls to Yibum, and therefore she says, Mes Baali, she reports her husband died, Titya Bem will allow her to marry her brother-in-law. Again, that's normally certainly disallowed, but one cannot marry his brother's wife, even after he dies. But in this scenario, we will believe her to let them do Yibum, essentially she can marry him. Ubeis Hil Omen Lo Sham Anu Ela Bava Mina Katsir Bilvad. Beis Hil is not convinced. Beis Hil says, yeah, he's aware. Beis Hil say they are aware there was a precedent in which the rabbi said we do trust a woman to report her husband died. That was a very specific case. It was the case of the wheat harvest case. They then referred to the wheat harvest case. And what happened was a man went out to harvest wheat. A snake bit him. He died. There weren't witnesses, kosher witnesses to testify what happened. But the wife knows what happened. She came back and said what happened. And in fact, the Bezdin sort of sent emissaries and confirmed that actually they found the sort of the rotting corpse, but identified it was indeed her late husband. But the point is, in that scenario, it's not too far from when the Bezdin could inquire and the truth will come out. So that's a scenario where we are going to be lenient, says Beis Hillel. But in a case of where we're talking about a report that's coming from the other side of the world in Tahiti, who knows? We can't investigate. Therefore, who says we can be lenient? So, to that, Amr Lahem Beisham, Beisham respond, Achas Abba min HaKatsir v'Achas Abba min HaZesim. First of all, yeah, it happened to be the case of a wheat harvest, but obviously the wheat harvest per se is not relevant. I mean, if it would have been a situation in which the next woman comes and says her husband died, he was, you know, bitten by a snake when he was picking olives, we wouldn't say, oh, it's not wheat, doesn't count. Of course, olives, wheat, what's the difference? So similarly, v'Achas Abba min Medina Sayam, who cares if it's nearby or far away? It's the same thing, says Beishamai. After all, you know, word eventually can get around. Velo dibru b'katsir ela behove. It's true they called it the harvesting wheat halacha, but like that's just because that's the specific case that it actually happened in. But under generic terms, if a woman comes and reports her husband died, chazal v'masakim, we believe her. And chazru beis hil horos k'beis shamai, beis hil changed their position. They said, okay, we accept that rationale. I mean, you know, even though Titi is far away, you know, people come back and forth from time to time, and the word will get out eventually, and we're going to believe her. Now, second part of the Mishnah is kind of building on the first. Same kind of scenario, Beis Shammai, Omrim Tinase Vesito Ksubasa. Not only can she remarry, based on the testimony of her and her alone, that her husband died, we'll also let her collect her Ksuba. Here we're referring specifically to the Ksuba, the Iker Ksuba, called the 200 Zuzes that she's promised she got married. She can get that as well. Right? Ubeis Hil Omrim Titnase, she can get remarried, Velo Tito Ksubasa, but she can't get the 200 Zuz from the estate to pay her Ksuba. Because, say Beis Hil, listen, the reason why we believe one witness, which is so extraordinary, normally to establish halachic fact in a Bez, you need to have two kosher witnesses. Here we have one witness, and it's a woman, and it's her. She's an Ogeas B'davar, so like, we can't believe her. So therefore, that the rabbis were concerned about Aguno, so she shouldn't be trapped and couldn't remarry again, so we'll let her remarry. But there's no Aguno situation with the 200 Zuz. That's a Mamonos situation, just a financial claim. And a financial claim, the rule is Hamotza Mechaver L'Avara, you need to have two witnesses, or else you can't make the claim. She lacks the witnesses, she can't make the claim, she can't get paid a 200 Zuz. Very simple, says Beis Hil. Amr Lehem Beis Shammai. So Beis Shammai respond, Hitartem Es Ha'erva HaChamura. They say, wait a second, you're letting a woman who otherwise it would be considered to be a married woman, marry somebody. That's about as severe a crime as you can get. It's like adultery, right? It's a capital crime. Lo satiru es hamamon hakali. You're not going to let her collect her ksuba also when she gets married. It's 200 zuz. It's like, it doesn't make sense. You'd be lenient on the big issue and strict on the small issue. Amrlem beis hillel, matzinu she'inha achim nechnasen lenachla alapia. They say, listen, there's lots of financial ramifications to a man dying. And the same way we don't believe the woman that her husband's dead to allow like the heirs to make claims on the estate. So we won't let her make a claim on the estate. It's the same thing. Amru lahem b'sham b'sham. I say, well, listen, a woman's claim on her ksuba is a little different than everyone else's financial claim because v'halo mesefer ksubasa nilmod. You actually can see from a precise reading of the standard text of the ksuba, at least the standard text in the time of the Mishnah, which spoke out shehi kosov ba, excuse me, shehu kosev la, that because the husband will write to his wife in her ksuba, she'im tinasi la'acher, titli masha kosev lich. If you should remarry somebody else, then you are allowed to collect your ksuba, whatever in here, the 200 zuz. Meaning, remember, when a woman is left as a widow, she doesn't get a ksuba, she just continues to live as a widow in like the home and estate of her late husband. But if she chooses to remarry, then she collects her ksuba, her 200 zuz, call it. So since the ksuba is explicit in linking her remarriage to her collecting her ksuba, say be shamai, that tells you that even though other financial claims regarding the husband's death require two witnesses, her collecting her ksuba is totally intertwined with her being able to remarry. And since we're allowing her to remarry, we'll allow her to collect her ksuba as well. Say Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, Chazru Beis Hillel, Ahoros Kadivri Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel accept that argument that the ksuba's formulation makes it clear that ksuba claim, at least in the Ikar ksuba, is different than the other people's claims, the financial obligations that come out of someone dying, and therefore she can not only remarry but also collect her ksuba.